get ready, Peabody Committee. Radio Magic today. We have excitement. Excitement is going to abound today. We have a great show. Let me introduce everybody to you. A reminder, all you have to do if you want to be a part of the program, it's as simple as emailing us. It's panel@wamc.org. Now, there are no guarantees that if you write to us, we'll actually read your letter because we get so many, but we try to get to as many as possible. If you if your letter includes a cogent point and verbs, it tends to be read more than maybe if it didn't.
Or flattery to Alan.
Flattery to Alan also works. Does not hurt. Oh, there's your microphone. There you go, buddy. Yeah, all right. Let's go around the room. I'll introduce our gang today. Rosemary Armeo is with us. She is, of course, you know, I realize this, that newer listeners may not know this, but Rosemary was, from the inception of the panel, was a regular on our show. Then in 2017, left us to go to Jordan. Mm-hmm. To work with young investigative journalists, correct?
Right.
And now you were on a sabbatical, and you're with us for a couple of weeks, and we couldn't be more thrilled.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. I love your listeners.
Well, we love having you here.
And you guys.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a while since Dan Arizari has been on our program, and we're thrilled to have him. He's chairman of Capital District Latinos, and it's always good to have you on our show.
It's always good to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. College of St. Rose Professor of Journalism, Dr. Kaylin Brown is with us. Good morning, Kaylin. How are you?
Good, Joe. How are you?
I am fine. Good to see you. And Dr. Alan Chartok is here, WAMC's very own. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm with Kaylin. She says she's fine. I'm fine, too.
It's as simple as that. Good. We're all ready. Radio
Go.
Magic.
Radio Word. Magic.
panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc. I'm sorry, did you just say word?
I did. Oh, yeah, it's important for me to get that in.
That's good. Word. Okay. There's a shutdown. There's a government shutdown. And when you have a government shutdown, you decide you're going to negotiate. That's what you have to do. You have to negotiate. Both sides have to get together, and they have to hash out their differences, and at the end, there will be some sort of conclusion. So that's what they tried to do yesterday. Trump went in to the office and said, hey, I want money for the wall. The Democrats said no. Trump slammed down his fist and left.
You forgot the Skittles. Didn't
yeah.
You offer Skittles?
Butterfingers.
He
yes,
called,
the president shared candy with the Pelosi and Schumer, I believe.
Well, that's a nice thing.
Cheap date.
Yeah, there you go. It's the little bite size. The M&Ms used to have the presidential seal on them. I wonder if those
they did.
Too. Yeah.
It was Reagan who had the jelly beans, right?
Yes, that was the... Okay, and in the end, called the meeting a total waste of time. So, we are no further along than we were... 19 days ago, and as of, I believe, tomorrow, which is going to be the first payday for these federal workers who will not be paid as a result of the shutdown, will also bring us, there's some exact time, which I'm not sure what it is, but at some point tomorrow will make it the longest government shutdown in the history of the United States.
It's interesting because CNN is running a clock. You know, we used to be able to see what your stocks are worth with Dow Jones. Now you're looking at the clock all the time.
Yeah, the Washington Post does the same thing on their front page, too. All right. So who wants in on the meeting?
I'm wondering how long it will be before the Republicans begin to attack labor, you know, because I don't think anybody's really talked about that. But there's a shutdown and look, you know, the world's not falling apart. Do we really need all these 800,000 workers? Because this is a very anti-union, as we know, administration.
And anti-federal workers.
And deep state and all that nonsense. So I think it's just a matter of time before we begin to see a narrative develop about how useless these people are.
Wow.
I could be wrong.
And these are the same people that the president said a week ago that they were all for him.
Well, right. I think that air traffic controllers are particularly important employees for those of us who like to fly the friendly skies. Mm. I think that
we want them to be friendly.
Right. I think that the fact that they are not getting paid, and if TSA workers are not getting paid, ultimately, does that result in our security being disadvantaged even more so than the border wall?
I just don't want you to conflate the two. Air traffic controllers, yes. TSA, there's a big question about whether we actually do need them and whether they do contribute to security. I'd like to see some more work on that, but... But your point is taken.
Well, they take my bottle of water every time I'm trying to go.
I was going to say, they owe me a couple of them. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm grateful to have them go through my suitcases and to take my shoes and to make sure that I'm not one of the people who could be jeopardizing our flight. I don't know about the
studies.
There's
just no study shows that they do any good at all. We might better spend the money on taking pictures of all the suitcases that go into cargo rather than TSA. But that is not to dilute the point, which I want to go back to, that Dan and you are making, that workers are not valued by this administration. We saw it at the ambassadorial level where he said, you don't need a State Department, you have me.
Right.
And he has decimated that department. So it's not ridiculous to think he could do it in other places.
And you mentioned the air traffic controllers. I mean, do we not recall what Reagan did when they went out on strike?
Yeah, so that's a real fear.
So how is this gonna? I don't know the answer to this. I don't know that any of us know the answer to it. But how is this gonna play out? I mean, we thought for a while. I mean, it seems to me there's one of two ways, right? That they're either the Republicans start to peel off and apply pressure, and then something gives, or the president does declare a national emergency, which would be a win for him, and then even in some ways, I think would be a win for the. Would be a win for the Democrats, because either way, they can both claim that they were victorious in standing their ground. And ultimately, the government would go back to...
We have here, Joe, what we call a crisis, a constitutional crisis. Anybody who thinks they know how this is going to come out doesn't know. We don't know. We put our shoulders up in the air and we say, what? Because there is no clear outcome. This guy... who'd sold real estate the way he's trying to, and negotiated real estate deals the way he's trying to do this, could walk out of a room. And that was disgraceful as he walked out with 800,000 workers, you know, at stake and not getting a paycheck. Terrible. So I don't know how this comes out, because I don't think this guy's going to move off the dime.
I don't think it's a constitutional crisis. There is a process. He's testing the system. But there is a process in place to figure out what the outcome ought to be, though we don't know what it is. It's a clear process.
Well, how about answering Joe's question?
About how I think it's going to, I think he's going to declare a national emergency and it'll be tested. I don't think Republicans had a chance yesterday with a bill to open the Treasury and the IRS, which everyone is in favor of. Nobody wants to not have, income tax returns sent back, because that just puts the pressure up on everybody. So everybody's in favor. The bill was open. The president said, no, you have to stick with me. And the Republicans did. I'm sorry. I'm sick of hearing about Murkowski and Collins and how that's a trend coming, that all the Republicans are going to peel off. Murkowski and Collins, that's it.
And by the way, neither of them, particularly Collins, who I have a certain amount of ire towards,
ever end up
standing up doing what they're supposed to do. No. McConnell is carrying their water for them. That's what this is really all about. So they could whisper to reporters, oh, no, I don't think this is right, and we should open up the government again, and that can be reported out. But in the meantime, McConnell is doing the dirty work for them, and they should be held responsible because they elected him leader.
I think that we have to somehow, the narrative has to be taken back from the Republicans. That's the only way that this is going to shift.
How do you do that?
Well, I think part of it, to me, from my perspective, has to do with putting a face on not just the workers, but you know what's being lost in this conversation is this is a shutdown that has to do with stemming the brown menace that's coming up from the border, right?
Sure.
And we have lost sight also of those 13,000 families and children who are in shelters that everyone knows are despicable and horrible in terms of sanitary conditions and safety. We are losing sight of the fact that these young people will be traumatized forever, because you have children separated from their parents, and we have no sympathy apparently as a nation. And I'm talking obviously hyperbolically, but it seems that we have no sympathy for these very real lives that we have placed in the desert. So my message to you, Alan, and to the whole world listening, let my people go.
Okay.
Charlton Heston said to Yul Brynner.
Charlton Heston, that's right. I want to take some issue with that. First of all, because my eyeballs are glued to the cable stations, and they are forever doing stories about disenfranchised children, people who have been separated, how bad these camps are. So I don't think we can say we've totally lost sight of it. It's presented to us as a nation whether we really care that much. I think that the Trump administration did care enough so that when this last round about the kids who died came up, they really had to run for the hills, and they did. And this is not a guy who does things because they're right. He does it because he's getting hurt.
Right. But he paints all of this in broad strokes, and that's the problem. And because he's such a master of manipulating the media, I'm sorry.
It's true.
He has changed the conversation. And now we're not talking about asylum seekers. We're talking about
criminals.
We're talking about caravans. We're talking about people carrying disease.
Right.
And that is the narrative that is really dominating this conversation. I'm sorry.
One of the best stories of the past year was the young, not that this happened, of course, but the young woman in Iowa who was killed, and the suspected murderer is an illegal migrant. And the family rejected her being used and exploited.
That's very true.
And actually put in to help, it gave money, I guess, to donate and actually had a migrant child come to their family. And that's putting the face on. That's the sort of thing that makes a difference.
So, Dan, you started talking about sympathy, and before I came here today, I kept thinking about empathy, too, right? Mm-hmm. Where is the empathy for all these people, which gets back to and circles back to Joe's question about, well, what is going to happen? Well, we know real facts about what is happening now. There are individuals who are trying to get HUD loans, but the government shut down, and they can't get HUD loans to fix their homes. They can't find food. The safety net is falling apart at the seams because there aren't enough resources. The people that have the most to lose are losing it. So that's the real consequence today.
Yeah, it has real consequences. This is not some kind of abstract discussion. I mean, there were people on CNN this morning. There was this, I think he was a firefighter who had fought the wildfires in California. He has 7 daughters, and he has lost his income. And he's like, well, I'm going to have to call the utilities. I'm going to have to call the mortgage company. And I'm going to have to, you know, basically plead with them to just, you know, relax a little bit. And I'll be back to work and then catch some odd jobs. You know, this guy might end up working at a Wendy's or something just to make, you know.
Here's my question. Can the media really make readers and viewers feel empathy? The media is filled with these stories. It's not that they're not being covered. Everybody is working overtime to find the firefighters and the mothers who can't and the woman whose roof is leaking and her house is falling apart. But, you know, the truth is, unless it hits you, you don't feel it. That's why the income tax return is so important. I mean, I thought about the only way that I'm really affected. Well, I have to fly back, so that there's the airport thing. And I wanted to go to the African American Museum on Martin Luther King weekend. I probably won't be able to. That's not a major effect on my life. So what kind of empathy do I have? And I'm a news person who reads everything.
Right.
It can't be up just to the media to make people feel empathy.
So meanwhile, the president travels to the border today to further his case that there is a crisis. One of the discussions that I thought was very interesting, John King made this point on CNN last night, that if there is a crisis, where is the governor of Texas? Where is the governor of Arizona? Where is the governor of California? Where are the state leaders that are saying hey, there's a crisis at the border? Does that make
you mean they're not there?
They're not there.
Yeah.
So, well,
there is no crisis.
Because there's no crisis.
Right.
So, and they're not getting involved in that. So, does that, what does the president accomplish by going down more? And I mean more than what he has already put forward over the last week and a half.
How many times have we said on this panel, solidify the base, solidify the base, solidify the base? That's what this is all about.
But there's a point where the car is already washed, right?
I'm sorry. I don't quite get that.
Well, I mean, if you keep solidifying the base, I mean, there's a point where it's solidified.
Well, no. The whole idea is to keep it going. The whole idea is to inflame that group of people and to show off and to say what I'm doing is purely for you. To that group of dissatisfied people, that's the 40%. I don't think there's another way to look at this.
I hate to say this, but yes, I think Alan is right. Trump has never once reached on out beyond that 40%. He believes he keeps them entertained. That's part of this. And feeling like he's speaking out for them, whether it works or not, to their benefit. And they will continue to be his supporters and go out and vote for him. And that's a 40% block he's pretty sure of.
And this is a sort of Damocles that he hangs over the rest of the Republican
Party.
Correct.
That's right.
I wonder if those members of his base who may be suffering from the federal shutdown would be moved in another direction. It may not be all of that base. Would it eat away at it? Would there be a chance that the diminishment of resources to certain people might be?
Well, farmers and manufacturer
and
workers
and kids who can't get their meals.
By trade.
No, I don't think it will. So far, nothing that he has done, no matter how obnoxious, and that's exactly the right word, has dug into that 40%.
But you still have food stamps, you have housing subsidies, you have the services for America's poor. They have not started to have an impact, but they will if this continues.
I'm thinking about the school districts. I'm glad Alan brought that up about kids getting food because, for instance, in the city of Albany, in our capital of New York State, there are a high percentage of students receiving free meals. And thankfully, we have that. What's going to happen at Albany High School? And are they putting in place any subsequent or emergency plan in the event that every student who's entitled to free food, both breakfast and lunch when we were there, is no longer entitled to that?
And one of the most interesting things about the way all of this is going is that when the president and his people see that there's irate reaction to something like a kid not having a lunch, they say, okay, well, this one will be excused. You know, in other words,
right,
we're going to feed those kids. So what's happening is more and more as each of these gets to be prominent, they react to it.
They take care of it and then they move on.
Sure. Right, like budget allocations.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversations. We will always, of course, welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. We're learning a lot during the break.
And, great day at the roundtable. I'm sitting here soaking it all up.
We knew it.
Look it up.
All right, we have letters. Oh, there are your letters, Alan.
Well, thanks.
We'll get to the letters. Quick programming note, at 10:05 this morning, the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, will be joining Alan for a conversation for the that half hour. So our panel will go till 10 o'clock this morning. So we have 25 minutes to get to a lot of topics and a lot of letters, and we start right now.
Okay, Sandra writes, the shutdown in the at the border, a Trump's their fire. President Trump has a perfect situation. He's only punishing refugees and migrants whom he looks at as criminals and thugs and, capital letters, government workers who he characterizes as members of the deep state. He can reward his friends in construction and steel manufacture and still punish migrants and deep staters. Looks like the perfect Trumpster fire to me, says Simon. All right. Hearing no comments on that, Ryan says, wall trade-off for the Dems. Hi, gang. One of the Democrats publicly demands something more valuable in trade for building this wall. Medicare for all, enshrining women's reproductive rights in the Constitution, changing gun laws, voting reform. Why not ask for all of it? Cheers, Ryan. P.S. Flattery to Alan. Notice I spelled it correctly.
Flattery to Alan.
John says, letter for the panel. I tried to send this letter to you earlier, but I don't know if it actually got through. Just in case, here it is again. I think there is a very simple solution for Trump's request for money for the wall. All he needs to do is offer to pay for it by repealing the $1 trillion tax break that he offered the wealthiest people in the country. He gets the wall, and his most ardent supporters get to pay for it. And Zach says, federal workers who are currently working without pay are yet to exercise their greatest leverage, withholding their labor. Some TSA workers have called in sick, but it isn't widespread. By the way, they've been punished. They've been told that they would be punished if they did.
Of course.
Yeah. If you want to know how valuable federal workers are, just wait until they stop working. Yeah, I have to say at this juncture of our program that I disagree with Rosemary, and I do agree with Kaylin. I do think that I want to be protected when I go through the line.
I want to be protected, too. TSA does not protect.
How do you know that?
Because I've read all the studies, all the reports, yeah, all the investigations.
Forward them to me, will you?
Certainly.
Paul says, I'll soak him up. Paul says, shut down. He will declare a national emergency today on his photo op trip. Government will open tomorrow. American public forgets in a few days. He wins again, unfortunately. Your comments.
That seems like a perfectly rational.
Please vote in 2020. That's my comment. Please vote.
Ann says, national emergency. Dear esteemed panel, I haven't heard any news outlets covering the most dangerous implication of Trump's threats to declare a national emergency to get his wall, which is, hasn't such a tactic been used historically by dictators to suspend elections and establish a totalitarian state?
Yes.
Yes.
And that has been covered. Yeah, he did. There's a big worry that he knows about this because he's looking for ways to get around and establish normal way of doing business. And if he wins on this one, you can bet it won't be the only national emergency he calls.
I don't remember the opinion, but it was either in the Times or the Washington Post about that this was right out of the authoritarian playbook of you have the national emergency, you do what you want, you circumvent the body that is supposed to put you in check, and you move on.
Vinny, or Vincent as we now call him, comment. it's absurd to say that TSA workers are a waste of money. Certainly, they're not perfect, but there's no such thing as perfect security. If you don't think they're needed, just ask the families who perished on 9/11.
TSA would not have helped them. Sorry.
Well, you don't know that.
Well,
you're spending billions on the possibility that they may be effective. Hey, that's what we're doing. Not good policy, Alan.
If it's one loved one, it's worth it. Okay, Richard says, federal employees. When President Trump was sworn in at his inauguration, he was very disrespectful of federal government employees. He explained that his victory was a win for the American people and a loss for the Washington, D.C. establishment, the establishment being everyone who works in the federal government. He has no problem with cruelty towards federal government workers. It's actually an important part of his governing philosophy, and that's from Richard. And then finally, the last letter I have before me until more arrive is from Peter, who says, TSA necessary? When I asked a friend of mine who was a TSA officer if the TSA really contributed to airline security, he laughed and characterized the agency as a screen door on a submarine. That's Peter from Kerhonkson.
Thank you for writing, Peter.
One for you, Rosemary.
The only thing I would add to that is that I think we should be careful that it's, when we talk about federal workers, of not denigrating the people, but often the culture of the jobs they hold.
Yeah, I don't blame any TSA officer. Well, I do the rude ones. But these are jobs that give people a chance to support their family. I do not think they should be cut off the way they have been in the shutdown. That is completely separate from my views on the efficacy of their department.
But, you know, gang, there's one thing that I find very interesting here, and we're seeing it in some of the letters that come to us, and that is, as this shutdown gets worse and worse and worse, and as Chuck and Nancy say, no, you're not getting your wall, there are those people who are writing us and saying, okay, trade it. Trade it for, you know, Medicare for all. Trade it for, as if this president is going to give you Medicare for all as a result of this. He's still trying to shut down Obamacare.
I think Chuck and Nancy would trade for safety for the Dreamers, and Trump presented with that, said, no, well, I'll look at it, but I'm really waiting to hear what the Supreme Court says. He's not dealing.
He's made an ultimatum.
What happens when the
farmers who are supposed to get their subsidy checks, they've already interviewed a couple of them.
Point.
And they're saying, if I don't get this money, I'm going to have to lock up my operation. And I think that's the pressure point that we might see will finally give a dose of courage to some of the, I don't know if you could call it courage, but an incentive for some of these Midwestern senators to balk.
So we get a fresh batch of letters here. We'll do those, and we'll go to a break, and then we'll do, when we come back, we'll do our last 15 minutes on our final topics. Sound good?
Absolutely.
Sounds great.
Yeah. All right. It's a roadmap, if you will.
Yeah. Susan says...
exit strategy.
The Dems.
That's right. An exit strategy. I like that.
Susan says the Dems. In every opportunity, the Dems should quote Trump on his being proud to shut the government. Put a video clip on a loop and blast it every chance we have on the social media.
Yeah,
people forget it. They forget that he said it.
How many times he said it?
Well, he just said it in that famous... meeting,
right.
Which
the Oval Office meeting.
Well, I'm talking about the wall, and Mexico will pay for it. That, too, should be included.
And Christina says, the real crisis. Good morning, panel. From my perspective, the real crisis is the division that President Trump is sowing in this country. He is stoking hatred and aggression. Do you think he can overcome this?
Yep.
We can overcome this, even after he ceases to have a political position. What can we do now to counter his narratives and bring people together?
I think that's a point well taken. I just want to say that I don't know if everyone knows about the Three Kings holiday, but it's a big holiday in the Hispanic community.
Yep. Sure.
And over the last weekend, in combination with a marvelous group called Centro Cívico of Albany, Capital District Latinos held a beautiful celebration for Three Kings Day, where we got presents donated, and all the children who came left with a free present. But I looked out in the fellowship room of the Cultural Empowerment Community Engagement Center, formerly the St. John's Church. I looked out on a beautiful array of families from all different countries in Latin America. And I said to myself, you know, this is the promise that we hold as a country to people who want to better their lives. And this person in the White House right now is trying to change the culture of America.
Yeah, but what about the 40% who don't agree with the word you just said? I mean, certainly I do.
Because he's poisoned the well, Alan.
Yeah.
He has manipulated the conversation, and he is the Pied Piper leading those people off the cliff.
It is, but we also have people, and I believe you said something like this a few seconds ago, which leads me to worry about false equivalency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no civility now. We have to begin to talk to each other. We have to begin to compromise and agree with each other. But you know something? There is something called right and wrong in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that you split the baby every time and say it's half and half, because it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But you take a break and you keep talking and you try to come to some compromise rather than behaving like a child and walking out of the door without getting your way.
I agree with you.
All right.
Okay. Roger says, if President Trump declares a national emergency, in quotes, to get his wall, perhaps the spineless Republicans who refuse to put country over party will realize we do indeed have a national emergency every day that this narcissistic, incompetent person remains in office. He has so committed so many impeachable offenses during his tenure, and this is exactly the sort of tyrant the founders anticipated. Congress must rise to the occasion in performing their constitutional responsibilities and impeach now. Well, I don't agree with that. I wrote a column on it recently. You can look it up. I truly think that the problem with impeaching, sure, you can impeach him in the House of Representatives now. It's going to go to the Senate. They're going to say thumbs down, and that's going to be the end of it. You have to wait on the Mueller report, number one, to see what he's got. And then you get one shot. You don't get five shots. You don't say, we'll impeach him now, and maybe we'll come back and impeach him again later. You won't have that opportunity. So you have to wait.
I'm encouraged because the composition of the House has changed so significantly.
Correct.
And I think that we have, unfortunately, it all started out with this crisis. But, I mean, the new era that was ushered in. But I think given some time, these young millennials and these older kind of stodgy but very wily politicians are going to figure a strategy out.
It could happen. I agree with you. Yeah. I think it could happen. And frankly, I think it should happen. Mm-hmm. But only when you have a chance of success. Mm-hmm. And at this moment, you don't.
Mm-hmm. I like the word wily. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Jim says, Russia and the shutdown. Can you talk about how much the shutdown benefits Putin's agenda? Is Putin getting what he paid for from Trump? Love you all. Jim from Del Mar.
Putin is the happiest and most powerful man in the world.
No puppet. Remember that?
Yeah. it isn't just the U.S. It's Brexit. It's the turmoil in Eastern Europe. He's transcendent in the Middle East. And he's doing this with a country with a terrible economy. It's amazing how he has played it.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with letters and finish up. And then at 10 o'clock, right after the 10 o'clock news, Alan will talk to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. We'll be right back after this.
Will you stay in our love story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing. Will you stay in our love story?
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. We have about 10 minutes left. We'll do some letters, hopefully get another topic or two in. Alan, go ahead.
Can I start with just a column that is going to be coming out that I wrote this week, which is, you'll remember that on this show, Andrew Cuomo endorsed Joe Biden, made national and state news by making that endorsement, right? So I wrote a column saying, I wonder why he did this. And the possibility, at least the possibility is, that he's running for vice president. And with, I don't know how to say this without self-reflection, but with old man Biden, that's not going to last forever. So you get one.
Well, you asked him that, right? I mean, you asked him that, and he deflected. Yeah. But
maybe he wants to run WAMC.
That's a possibility.
Trying to get in. You know.
Yeah. Well, if he's listening, maybe you'll ask him all at 10:05.
We'll soak them all up. Dear esteemed panel, it's not a question of whether folks are feeling empathy. It is who to blame. Trump's blame the shutdown on Democrats of both sides for government shutdown. After all, if the Democrats would only agree to the wall, all would be well, according to the Republican line. So frustrating. And says, Bobby, welcome home, Rosemary. Good to hear your voice. You are missed.
So a comment about the blame part.
Of course.
I think blame is part of the big problem across the country. I think everyone needs to stop blaming and start working on positive contributions to fixing.
Well, you know, that's such problematic stuff.
I wish I were the bigger person that could do it. You're right, Alan. Yeah.
I mean, there is right and wrong, isn't there?
But how do you advance what needs to be advanced? How do we progress our society or make it progress?
You don't give in to tyrants.
If we just hang on tight to blame. I know, but there are ways to move forward still.
Okay. Tell me what the way to move forward on your side of things is. To give him his wall, to give him his $5 billion and say, okay, because you know, and Chuck has said this, and I believe it, that only encourages him to do it the next time and every time you turn around.
You just asked me about my side. What about if we're all on the same side?
We're not.
The human side. We all want to help humans.
Oh, stop.
How's that?
We are not all on the same. We're not all on the same side. Some of us are misogynists. I hope I'm not. Some of us hate people of color. Some people hate Mexicans who may come across the border, and you start talking about rapists and this and that. And it turns out, of course, that's all malarkey, and it's the worst part of our national character.
One of the problems, Alan, is that, and you know this as a professor. I mean, if you want to learn, then you can figure these things out. I mean, we have to look at our history as a nation. The reason why these folks are coming out of these failed states is because we planted the seeds in the 1950s, destabilizing these governments, or in the 60s, or in the 70s with the Nicaraguan Contras and so forth. And so we planted the seeds for this, and now we're attacking these people because they are fleeing the places that we have destabilized.
Okay,
here we
go. Yes, James says, please discuss the difference politically between migrants and refugees.
Well, refugees are running away from imminent danger and war, and migrants have a longer-term plan that their life will improve, and so they move from one country to the next. And that has sort of conflagrated in today's world, where people are fleeing places like Syria, where there's war, and Guatemala, mm-hmm. where there's gang violence that mm-hmm. threatens their children. And it's also a long-term improvement. You can expect a better life in the United States, and we as a nation have a duty to help provide that. I would be open to a compromise. I would give him his $5 billion if that included money for taking care of the Dreamers. No more yeah, discussion about that pathway to citizenship, and if it included increased number of judges and asylum hearings so that people coming to the United States for help get vetted, so you have border security, and the people who are really legitimately mm-hmm. fleeing for their lives and their future get to come in and add to the wealth of
and
this
that
country.
May be how it all ends up. Anyway, Linda writes to us and says, brilliantly, I agree with Alan. I disagree with Rosemary on 2 points. One, TSA is vital. My son-in-law is a pilot, and I would hate to see some of those confiscated weapons get aboard. Two, I have great empathy for stories that air on the national news. I actually shed a few tears this morning for a Coast Guard mother who has a very ill child. Mm-hmm. And Eileen says, deficit? Good morning, panel. How do we so easily even consider allocating $5 billion for a wall or anything? Trump says it will pay for itself. What about our debt? Isn't it totally off the rails at this time? And Kerry says, Trump supporters don't care about the shutdown. I live in a very red county in northern New York, and I'm here to tell you that Trump supporters are loving this shutdown. Even those who are upset about tax returns and food supplemental programs are not blaming him but the Democrats. I have come to believe that there is nothing that can be said or done to change Trump supporters. I have tried acting reasonable, factually based conversations with many friends and family, and their response is always fake news or that's not true. And Betsy says,
talk about changing the dialogue and the conversation. That's the most damaging thing he did. Anything you disagree with, you can just call it fake news.
Yeah.
And there is enough actual fake news that it seems credible. Betsy
says, hello, esteemed panel. Polls showing 52% blaming Trump, while only 5% blame Republicans. People need to realize that McConnell and the rest of the Republicans are blamed for not bringing the bill they already agreed to the president. All of us need to refocus our collective ire on the Republicans. The shutdown is benefiting them more than anything we realize. Nice to have Rosemary around again.
I'd like to know what poll that was. The Gallup polls are showing, at least before the address, were showing blame disproportionately on Trump and the Republicans, so I don't know where that
Well, no, it's
from.
Interesting, because what she said was right. They're blaming Trump,
yeah,
but not necessarily the Republicans.
Yeah.
Okay, and Ellen says, empathy. Welcome, Rosemary, and Alan is always right. I have empathy for the people arriving at the border, and I'm generally freaked out over the lack of care and trauma inflicted on the children. What good does that do? The problem is the members of Congress and our so-called president who have no empathy. How do we change their minds? And Peter, our friend from Castleton, says, generally, I agree with the panel, and the president is an embarrassment. At the same time, it would be helpful to have someone on the panel who really understands the side of the discussion which has fueled this division of opinion in the country. It seems likely to me that many of us don't have any idea why this division has been so durable. And then we heard from David, who says, work at Wendy's. Work at Wendy's, you wish. Do you think they want to hire people and train them that will quit as soon as next week when the shutdown ends? Getting an interim job is not easy. And then
that's
finally,
very good point. Well made. Yeah.
And finally, Mitchell says, letter for the panel. The Dems could agree to the wall in exchange for restoration of all rescinded EPA protections, a commitment to increase future carbon emission restrictions, and DACA. Trump wouldn't go for it, but his refusal will help get rid of him in 2020. I think we're rid of him in 2020. I'm not one of those, unless the Democrats make a huge mistake.
Did anybody see that article? I think it was in The Atlantic, that talked about a Trump supporter who was interviewed, who happened to be either a government worker or somehow getting money from federal funds, who said he's hurting the wrong people.
Yeah.
So, in other words, the idea behind that article was the people who voted for Trump want other people to be hurt. That's a
wow.
That's a frightening.
That's
thought.
Worse than not feeling empathy. That's like
yeah,
wishing
like,
ill
you know,
on your
you're hurting me.
Citizens.
Yeah, but you're supposed to be shooting at those people over there.
But what we don't want
to
do is to suggest
that article.
It is.
What we don't want to do is suggest that all Republicans who voted for Trump are bad people.
No, of
because,
course not.
Because they're not.
I have relatives who voted for Trump.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah.
I can't talk to them at Thanksgiving. But.
We do what we can do. The president is getting ready to head south and spoke a few moments ago. He said that the GOP is united, extremely united is the
extremely,
term he used, and extremely united, and also that the wall would pay for itself within 3 to 4 months. That second point.
You're going to generate revenue at the wall?
Oh, all right. We only have 20 seconds, so we don't have time to.
Okay. All right.
We don't have time to.
Good. Maybe it can pay, for TSA, too, while he's at it.
All right. My thanks to everybody coming up. Right after the news, Alan will be speaking to the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. Rosemary, Dan, Kalen, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Being here. Appreciate
thank
it.
You so
we'll be
much.
Right back after this short break. Seven minutes past 10 o'clock on this Thursday, the 10th of January, and it's a great pleasure to welcome the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, to the program to speak with Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. And Alan, go to it.
Okay, will do. Governor, welcome back. Glad you're here.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Okay. Listen, we have 27 minutes or so, 23 minutes, and we have to move fast. So if you could avoid any...
I know. You say that to me every show. I consider me chastised
any
for
filibustering,
long speaking.
That would be great. Okay. You saw that the president had a primetime address, and then he walked out on negotiations and maybe 2 or 3 minutes on all of that.
It's all posturing, doctor. He wants a wall. He wants to be able to say it was a wall. His base wants a wall. He thinks that's what he said in the campaign. By the way, that's not what he said in the campaign. He said Mexico was going to pay for the wall. So he already reneged on that promise. And we need border security. The Democrats have voted for it before, but border security, sensors, maybe walls in some places, gates. Of course you need border security because you can't have an entrance unless you have a non-entrance. But he is just insisting on playing politics.
Okay. The idea that he would get up in a huff and walk out on Chuck and Nancy, what do you think of that?
Yeah, he's unprofessional.
You wouldn't
Who
do it,
cares?
Would you?
Who cares? who cares what your personal feelings are? You know, if I had the luxury of only dealing with people who I like,
you wouldn't be
personally,
here.
I'd be in a phone booth.
You wouldn't be here. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. You made a Me Too joke. It's all over the press today, in which you said, I'll have to report you to Me Too if you keep crowding me. Was that a mistake, or have we gone too far?
No, I think it was an offhand comment. You know, I'd walked out into the hallway, and I was assaulted by the gaggle with pieces of equipment hitting me and all sorts of my anatomy, and it was a offhand comment just to get them to move back. You know, the physical assault was overwhelming, but it was just an offhand comment.
Yeah, you said all parts of my anatomy. Any further on that, or that's where we're going to stop it?
No, they just, you know, how it works when they come in a crush.
Yeah.
And literally get in your physical space, and they have cameras and microphones and tape recorders, and it's they just physically confront you.
Yeah.
Which is just the nature of the beast. But it was just an offhand comment to say, move back and give me a little physical space.
Mm-hmm. When's the budget address going to be?
Tuesday.
And where's it going to be? In the assembly?
No, it's going to be a combination. This is a little different this year, Alan, because I really did two versions of the State of the State, you could say, already. I laid out a full agenda at what I call the FDR speech, the New Deal, and laid out a legislative agenda. Then in the inaugural, the full speech at the inaugural, I abbreviated it at the actual inaugural because it was going long, but the full speech that's out has the whole agenda again. So I'm going to do on Tuesday the legislative agenda and the budget together in the convention center probably on Tuesday afternoon. What I have said, the legislative agenda that the new leader, who we're excited about, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, went through hers yesterday. We basically have the same legislative agenda. I have said that we'd like to get it done in the first 100 days. Anything that's not done, I'll put in the budget, because the budget is a moment in time where you must decide and you must move forward. I'm pleased to see they're already moving elements of the agenda. Anything that's not done, we'll try to get wrapped up in the budget. I think we have an historic 100 days here, and a great opportunity. We just have to get it done. I said yesterday, you know, we've had a Democratic Senate, Assembly, and Governor before 2009. Old timers like you and I remember 2009, and nothing happened. And then the Democrats lost the majority. So we have the agenda. We just have to make sure we don't trip over our own feet and we actually get it done. And we get it done in a way that the Senate functions well and politically has a mandate to maintain the majority in 2 years. We had the majority. We lost it. We don't want to do that again. And that's why I'm so excited about Andrea Stewart-Cousins, not just because she's making history as the first woman, first African-American. She is a highly sophisticated leader. And the Senate majority is a sophisticated political calculus. You have people from Suffolk County. You have people from the Bronx. You have people from Buffalo. And you need an agenda that serves all those needs. And it's not that easy, because this is a diverse state. And there's one political rationalization in New York City, and there's a quite different one in Suffolk and Nassau and Buffalo. And I think she has the skill set and the leadership ability to navigate those treacherous straits.
Let me ask you that on the list of I read one newspaper account and I saw Mike Gianaris all over ethics, wants to make sure that there's going to be an ethics package that will really please New Yorkers. But on the reportage on Andrea Stewart Cousins, I didn't see that on her list of the most doable and important things right now. Now, maybe I was misreading, but in your wish list, is ethics reform right up there?
Yeah, what you're going to see in the Senate, that's an example of what we were talking about. New York City legislators represent their district in New York City, and they have one set of concerns. Suffolk has a different set of concerns. Buffalo has a different set of concerns. And we've made the mistake in the past, frankly, where the Senate leadership was too New York City-centric and lost the majority. I just spent a lot of time on Long Island helping elect those senators and Peter Harcum, Westchester. The Republicans in those areas, their attack on the Democrats is they're too New York City-centric.
No. But what about ethics? Ethics is a statewide issue, whether people...
My ethics agenda is going to be very aggressive. I believe on both houses, I've had really heartbreaking situations that I've gone through with ethics, as you know about. Yep. We've had Sheldon Silver, we've had Dean Skelos, we've had the chief financial officer of the controller. We've had Eric Schneiderman. There's no reason why the people of this state look at Albany askance. So I'll have a very aggressive ethics program. I want to do real contract procurement. I want to do FOIL for the executive and the legislative. You know, the legislature has no freedom of information law, which is just unbelievable. And the Republican Senate stopped it. And some great senators like Liz Krueger proposed it, and Valesky and Squadron and Assemblyman Danny O'Donnell. Let's pass FOIL. Let's pass public finance.
Okay, FOIL for everybody is freedom of information law. Okay, it's just there may be some who don't get that. Sorry.
Yeah. Let's pass public finance. Let's pass all those things we talked about that we wanted to do. And now we can actually do it.
So you're going to give the controller, according to your plan, back the responsibility for pre-audit?
Look, I have never. I want to go further than that. As I mentioned to you last time in too many words, the Attorney General and the controller sign off on contracts. They have very little information when they sign off on contracts. I want to do a questionnaire to the grantee that comes with the contract. Did you have a lobbyist? Did you have a lawyer? Do you have any relationship with the granting entity? Do you have any family members who work with the granting entity? Ask the questions that give the controller, the IG, real leads to follow up on. But my only issue was get it done in 30 days.
Okay.
Because we also have to function.
Okay, but my question is, the pre-audit responsibility, which might have stopped some of the hanky-panky in the government, was taken away from Tom DiNapoli as the controller. Is that going to get put back along with your questionnaire?
First of all, I don't want to embarrass you.
Please.
Name one pre-audit that found any fraud.
I cannot.
Tick, 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 tick. Okay, never mind, you can't. The pre-audit, the Attorney General's approval didn't find fraud because they don't have enough information. This will give them more information.
It would, but who's going to be administering that? Will the controller be administering it?
The controller will do it, and the IG will do it. Caveat, it has to be done in 30 days.
Okay, yes or no? Come on, Governor.
I also have to get things done.
Yes, I hear you. But yes or no, you're going to give him what you stripped him of.
No, I didn't strip him of it.
You
That's
and the legislature.
Terminology.
No, it's not. You and the legislature.
It took too long. I'm a fan of the controllers. Bureaucracies take time. Get it done in 30 days. You'll have a questionnaire. You'll have more information. Great.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Give them the staff, but you are. Let's see what the news is right here. You are saying that 30 days, we want it done in 30 days, but we're going to give them back that pre-audit function, which the legislature, signed by the governor, took away. Yes or no, sir, respectfully.
Better than pre-audit. A questionnaire with more information where you can do a substantive review. And the IG will have the same information.
Now, you mentioned favorably, and I couldn't agree with you more, Senator Liz Krueger and some good government groups are pushing a new replacement for JCOPE, which some people call J-JOKE, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics and the Legislative Ethics Commission. How do you feel about that?
I would support it if it makes sense, but that was a complicated equation. Let's do the things that we know we can do right up front. You know you can do freedom of information law. You passed it already. The Senate supported it. You know you can do public finance. You know you can do campaign finance reform. You know you can do real contract procurement. Let's do those things. JCOPE is going to be, I'm in favor of JCOPE reform, but it took us months to work it out.
But you had the Republicans then. You don't have that now.
Yeah, but it was even tricky with the legislature because it was the first time ever the legislature was not in sole control of their own ethics. And that's what, why they objected to JCOPE. They didn't want shared ethics control. And that's why it was a difficult precedent. And believe me, it'll be the same difficult argument. I'm in favor of it, but we have, I really want to get things done quickly. We have a federal government that is shut down. 100 days was the benchmark, right? FDR, the famous 100 days. They use it as a benchmark to judge administrations. Let's run the table in 100 days on everything we can do. And the more complicated issues, I'm open to also.
So I wrote a column for next week. You may not like it. You may like it. You last week, you made a lot of news. You endorsed Joe Biden for president, if I was listening correctly. And I began to think about that. I said, you know, Joe Biden's a little older now. You know, wouldn't Andrew Cuomo like to be the vice president? Then when Joe Biden serves a term, he steps aside. And Andrew Cuomo becomes the president, you know, for the, or runs the next time. Isn't that a brilliant analysis?
Well, every analysis you have is brilliant because you write it, so you believe it's a brilliant analysis.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to argue with you because it's your show. But sometimes things can be simpler than they appear, Doctor. And you should know this better than anyone. I have seen this movie. It was called Mario Cuomo in the Presidency. Why did I say so emphatically, the exact expression,
yeah,
but
I'm not running for president,
God help me. Because I don't want to go through the ambiguity. I want the people of this state to know I have one focus, one interest, and it is being governor of the state. I'm not a typical politician to take the next step on the ladder. I don't want legislators to be able to say when we have a controversial issue, well, that's only because Cuomo's running for president. I don't want to waste time on dialogue with reporters. Well, are you running or you're not running? I believe Joe Biden should run. I believe Joe Biden will run. I believe he is the best candidate for the Democratic Party. I know him well. He's been a friend to this state. That's what I believe will happen.
Yeah. But what happens, Governor, in all due respect, if Joe Biden calls you on the phone and says to you, listen, Andrew, I need you on my ticket, and I want you to be vice president. I want you to run with me as the vice president. Now, you've given us a very definitive, I'm not running for president, I'm not going to do it. Lightning from the heavens if I break my word. But what about this idea of the vice presidency, which makes all kinds of sense to me?
Yeah, but it wouldn't make sense to Joe Biden because he's going to be looking for a part of the country where he needs an appeal and a state that he may not win, right? They're going to be looking at an electoral college. New York does not pop up on that. And I don't want to go through the movie we went through last time. What if, what if, what if, what if? What if I drop dead tomorrow, Alan? This is what I'm doing. I have no other plan. And I believe Joe Biden will run. He hasn't said he's going to run. I believe it. I believe he should. I believe this Democratic Party, it's not enough to be anti-Trump. I believe we're going to need someone who has credibility and authenticity and experience. And they learned the lesson with Mr. Trump. The lesson is you have to know what you're doing to do these jobs. You can't just pluck someone from a celebrity and put them in the position. You can't take a person who never ran a candy store and then say, run the government of the United States, or run a county or run a city. Experience, know-how, knowledge matters, and that's Joe Biden.
Yeah, but what I'm concerned about here is not so much Biden, who I think you're right about is an outstanding candidate and all. I'm concerned about you, and I worry about you. I mean, what are you going to do when this term is up? Will you go and be... will you run for a fourth term, something that was denied to your father to do that? Will you go to a white shoe or glove law firm, you know, and earn a lot of money? What will you do? You ever think about that? Ever talk to your partner about that?
What will I do 4 years from now? I'm focusing on 4 days from
okay,
now.
Okay, fair enough.
But I will look. There are a lot of options. I love doing what I'm doing. I just won this election with more votes than any governor in history in the primary and in the general. Think about that. More votes than any governor in history in the state of New York. There's two theories of why that happened. Number one, my mother's theory, which is it's my ravishing good looks and devastating wit and charm.
Well, that could be.
Theory two is we've actually done a good job, and the people of the state know it. It's not perfect, but they know that this state is doing well, and Buffalo's doing well, and LaGuardia is being rebuilt, and there's progress all over the state, and the North Country knows we care. And I believe that's what it was.
Well,
I believe you have a government that's performing.
And there's a third theory, and that is that Donald Trump is such an anathema to people in New York State that they say, we've got to support our Andrew. Not a possibility?
Well, they could have voted for someone else in the primary.
Well,
you supported somebody else in the primary.
I did? Okay.
Yeah, so they could have followed your lead. They didn't, to the tune of like 66%.
No,
but
you're right.
I just
about
mentioned that to give you a little zits.
I heard it. I heard it. Okay. And you're not all wrong. Okay. So then I want to talk to you about John Flanagan, the GOP leader who was missing the start of the session to deal out front about this with alcohol dependence. And now we have a new Senator Griffo who is leading the conference right now. Well, first of all, what do you think about Flanagan's guts coming forward and saying what's going on?
Good for him. He told the truth. The first step on solving a problem is confronting the problem. I know him. He's a good fellow. I wish him well. I am worried about what we see in the paper today with the Republicans in the Senate fighting with the Democrats in the Senate on the Ethics Committee. And if you accuse us, we'll accuse you. That's mutually assured destruction. You know, any senator can write a letter to the Board of Elections saying Senator X raised money from a donor and then passed this piece of legislation. Any senator can write a letter to the Inspector General saying this senator took this donation and then gave this grant.
But it could be true, right?
Yeah, but then you start a subpoena war and investigations, and everybody gets a lawyer, and now you're in a state of dysfunction and ugliness. So I hope they calm that down, because it is mutually assured destruction. The Republican senators can kill the Democratic senators, and the Democratic senators can kill the Republican senators, and you can trigger an investigation on anyone at any given moment. So I hope they calm that down. And Senator Flanagan, I wish him the best. That's a terrible disease. It's all too common. And again, I think that he stepped up and admitted it. That is to his credit.
Okay. The Wall Street Journal is telling us that lawmakers could give the troubled MTA billions of dollars during the session. What are you hearing? What do you think?
We need a constant funding source for the MTA. I think the only political viable one is called congestion pricing, where you have tolling in Manhattan Central Business District, and then you have to reorganize the MTA. It's a 1960s holdover.
So you want more power over the MTA?
Somebody has to run it, Alan.
Well, you've got all those appointments on there. There are many people who think that you really have that power already.
Nope, yeah. You know, because we're now in government by tweets. And the old days where people actually knew some facts and policy. I have 6 votes on the MTA board of 17. New York City is 4, the counties have 7. 6 of 17 is not a majority. Then, you know, the New York City mayor has a unilateral veto over the subway budget. Did you know Carl Heastie has a unilateral veto over the budget? Did you know Andrea Stewart Cousins has a unilateral veto over the budget? Did you know that the hiring is all done by the New York City civil service system? Nobody knows that. Nobody knows what a mess the MTA is. It was designed that way in the 60s because nobody wanted responsibility for the fare increases.
No, I got you. I wanted your response. You gave it, as always, honestly and straightforward. You do want to be given more responsibility. There's a yes or a no here, right?
No, I want someone to be responsible. I have plenty of things to do. But I don't want, Alan, what you just said, which was a falsity.
What's that?
That I am in charge of the MTA. I am not.
Okay.
There is no concept of more control because you have a couple of more board members when the board doesn't control a damn thing.
Okay.
Who ever heard of a board who passes a budget, but then the mayor, the speaker, and the Senate leader can unilaterally veto it?
Gotcha.
Nobody runs that mess.
Gotcha. Now I want to ask you one last question here, because we're truly running out of time. And that is, and I, by the way, I do appreciate your doing this. But what about your meeting with the New York congressional delegation? We have, you know, some new firebrand people, Cortez and others. What was your impression?
We talked about you a lot.
Did they? Oh, that's wonderful. But what in fact?
Everybody said good things. Well, first of all, I know
everybody,
almost all of them, for many years, even the new ones. You have Joe Morelli there, who's just a superstar and a half. So we had a good conversation, and I talked to them about New York needs. We have to repeal SALT, S-A-L-T. It's up to a 30% tax increase targeted on this state. It will be devastating. I also talked to them about what the shutdown means. We lose $150 million a month at the MTA. We could lose about 50% of the funding for food stamps. We had Rick Cotton, the head of the Port Authority. If the TSA slows down, you could see the airports back up. So this is serious stuff now, and I wanted to make sure they knew how it affected New York.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, I have to say, first of all, thank you, as I always do, respectfully, and I have to appreciate, as you do, this is the eighth week you've shown up. That's a lot, and I never expected it would last that long. But we thank you for doing it, because it's always fascinating.
Dialogue is good, and facts are better.
There you go. Thank you, Governor Cuomo. We'll hope that we'll see you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Doctor.